You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestall. We head back to Australia on this show, in the company of Dylan Stewart, host of the marvellous Paranormal Thoughts podcast. We look into some of Australia's UFO cases, including the 1966 Westall incident, a couple of experiences that Dylan has spoken to on his show, along with his own personal experience. A big thank you to Dylan for joining me on this week's episode. As you may tell, my voice is a little different this week, as I had emergency dental surgery the other day, so hopefully I won't be whistling for many more episodes to come. But I digress. Don't forget, you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. A big thank you to my latest patrons, Sarah, Andrew, Dave, and Chatox. Thank you for joining the team. Thank you to everybody that continues to support the show with your monthly contributions. It means a great deal. You can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media platforms. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube, and don't forget you can visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for news, episodes, and updates. Our intro and outro music is performed by the marvellous Weary Pines. Thank you as always to Dean Bestall for his wonderful artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange Network. So, let's head down under and discover the weirdness of Oz in the company of Dylan Stewart. Today on Mysteries and Monsters, I'm joined by Dylan Stewart, host of the marvellous Paranormal Thoughts podcast. The show features interviews with people who have experienced highly unusual events from across the Fortean field. Dylan, I'm delighted to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul. I've been really looking forward to getting to speak with you.
Absolutely. It's nice to speak to you in person rather than electronically. It's one of those strange things about podcasting that we end up building relationships with people that we never really speak to properly.
It's very like that, isn't it? Like, there's so much sort of backwards and forwards with messaging, or even just, you know, I feel like I already know you from listening to your show as well, than to actually finally get to speak. It's actually, it kind of comes full circle, which is really nice.
It is. Yes, I hope not to be a disappointment then, sir.
No, likewise.
So, Dylan, you're obviously based in Australia. So I think often, as we were saying before we started the show properly, Australia sometimes gets overlooked these days, I think, outside of the world of cryptids. And even then, it's quite a niche subject because it depends on people's understanding and an interest in the Yowie phenomenon, which is something that kind of has always enticed me. And I've been very fortunate enough to speak to a few people from Australia about a couple of subjects. But obviously, one of the aspects of Australian Fortiana that I've always been really intrigued in is the whole UFO topic. And I can't really remember what sort of opened my eyes to the strange things that were going on in Australia. I'm not really sure when it sort of appeared in my life. So what for you, Dylan? Because often when I speak to people from America or the UK, we've all got sort of touch poles where we know what got us into it. It might be a show, it might be a book, it might be a particular film. So for yourself, Dylan, what was it that drew you into this wonderfully weird subject?
I get asked that, I guess, every time I speak with people, and there's not really an exact moment or, I don't know, piece of media. I always just feel like I was just drawn to the strange, right? And as I kind of got older, I was able to embrace that more. And you kind of, you know, I guess by even starting the podcast, then others then embrace it as well. But, I mean, I remember just being a kid and just, I don't know, just being fixated on, like, even Goosebump books or, I don't know, everything that was odd or kind of a little bit frightening. You know, I was just, even though, you know, a lot of it would actually kind of, you know, scare me as a kid, it was still just that that draw for whatever reason to it. And then, yeah, I guess as I kind of got older, from watching even like the ghost hunting shows like on the Discovery Channel back in the day, and it all just kind of built to this point where I was like, oh, just the paranormal has now actually become so a part of my life, for better or for worse, I suppose. It's even kind of the way it's happened. It's like kind of out of my control, which in the last sort of 12 months, kind of reflecting over that, is really weird. And I feel like you might be able to relate to that a little bit too, where it kind of becomes more than an interest. It actually does become just a part of your being. And I guess just after you open yourself up to some of the subject matter, it's like the door just can't be closed anymore. You know, just how you perceive your entire existence and your reality just, maybe it doesn't completely change, but it does kind of start to make you question certain things, and it's just hard to ignore, I would say. But yeah, I can't really remember an exact moment, but whatever it was definitely kind of just, you know, lit that fire, and it's never really gone out since.
Have you found yourself a more sort of settled person once you fully embraced it, Dylan? Because I think for me, I kept it at arm's length for too long, and it was very similar to yourself, I would imagine, that when I finally listened to the advice of people close to me who said, you know, you really need to start talking to people about these things that you really like, it really kind of made me feel complete, I think. And I think sometimes when you have a real interest, and especially in this day and age, I think we're no longer the weird person who knows about strange things in the normal world. I think we tend to now be the kind of, if anybody's talking about strange things in the real world, we're usually the person they say, have you heard about this?
Yeah, it's a really weird transition. And I guess it kind of just happens naturally. But yeah, totally. To be on the other side of this now, where, you know, I remember being in high school and, you know, if anyone ever kind of found out I was interested in UFOs, they'll just look at you really weird and like, oh, you don't actually believe in that stuff, do you? And you kind of like really just thrown to the side, and you kind of just, as you said, you keep it to yourself. And then whatever day that was, I began to really embrace it and kind of, you know, have this outlet with the podcast. Yeah, things definitely got better, I'd say, you know, and now it's something that even if I talk to just regular people about it, you know, I'm still very cautious about how I approach it, because you never know someone's stance on it, and you don't really want people to, you know, completely ride you off to begin with. You're kind of like, well, can just stick with me for a second, because this is going to like go somewhere, you know. But even now, I definitely feel, yeah, more at ease about it all. And, you know, it's, I think too, you do find yourself becoming quite level-headed with it as well. You know, like even if something kind of jumps out at you, you might not jump straight into it and believe everything at, you know, kind of surface level. You do actually really hone your kind of research skills, and also just being able to question things, you know. And I've become very skeptical as time's gone on, you know, far more than when I started the podcast. So yeah, there's definitely the sense of ease with it, and I'm actually, yeah, glad that there's actually kind of an audience and a community with this stuff now more than ever. You know, you can actually find similar people that want to discuss these topics at length and have completely different views on things. You know, it's very different to, you know, when I was in school or even younger, and kind of, you know, having to keep the stuff to yourself, where now, you know, it's even just so in people's, you know, in their TikTok feeds or on their Instagram, you know, about UFOs and all these sort of cover-ups, you know, like the amount of people who send me stuff now who have never had any interest in this, but because it's, you know, shown in the mainstream so much more, all of a sudden, you know, they kind of want to have that conversation, which is a pretty new territory, I would say, to go from I can't talk about this to all of a sudden everyone wants to talk about it, and you almost become that person everyone sort of turns to. Yeah, it's really a really strange place to find yourself in, but I'm glad it's kind of gone the way it has.
So how's the general environment these days in Australia in regards to the topic of ufology? Because I know, obviously, I keep my eye abreast as many things as I can, and often sometimes it's a lot to take in with things coming in from the States and Europe and stuff here. And obviously, the last sort of real official stance I was aware of from Australia was when all this UAP investigation started kicking off in the States. There seemed to be a real sort of keeping things at arm's length from certain people in the Australian establishment. Is that the general sort of consensus down there in officialdom, Dylan, that they just, it's still treated as a little bit tongue-in-cheek by people in important positions? Or is there a bit of a shift that, as we've seen over the last sort of 5 or 6 years in the States? I mean, here in the UK, our government just isn't touching this subject at all, regardless of who's decided to be Prime Minister for 6 months, which I'm sure you guys can appreciate as well, because you've had a very similar thing recently with numerous incumbents in the head office. Obviously, the states, we've got people from both sides of the House sort of embracing this topic and coming together, which is something I've always been very surprised of in recent years. So how is it? Has it changed the conversation down there?
Definitely not on a level of, I suppose, like official or even in the media, you know, like the Australian media. I mean, and I even work in the media, and I don't think the UAP subject that was going on in the states a few months ago was even touched upon. But as I sort of mentioned, like in people's Instagrams, on their Facebook, you know, TikTok, it was really being pushed there. So I guess that's where I saw the shift, was more the everyday person being aware more so of this phenomena. But Australia's a really interesting, I'll use the word interesting, I was going to say strange, but I won't lump us in there. It's a very interesting climate here where we're a very small population and we're quite isolated as well, and just the mentality of people here, it's very different, and I wouldn't say backwards, but maybe just kind of, it's very far behind a lot of other places in the world. And I feel like it's kind of like that because Australia's really trying to keep to it, it's not keep to itself, but there's definitely this thing about we are our own people, you know, we're not a smaller version of America or anything like that, you know. And the way that this kind of phenomena, I would say for most people, even if it all kind of came to light and there was a lot of evidence shown, I feel like a typical Australian wouldn't even care that much. I know it sounds bizarre, but there is this kind of thing in this country where it's like, nah, there's bigger problems, you know, like everyone kind of keeps to themselves, and maybe if they had an interest, it would be a game changer. But and I might be speaking more about maybe the older kind of population as well. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, there could be Australians listening to this going, I don't know what you're talking about. But that's just kind of my feeling on it. Like, we're still very, very young in the sense of, I don't know, I guess things kind of being progressive in a lot of things, I'd say. So this, I feel like, is so far down the list of priorities for people to really open themselves up to. You know, like, we can't even have the whole country doing daylight savings, like things like that. Like, we're still so, like, where I live's like, they don't want it. And it just makes everything confusing because the sun comes up at like 4 a.m. It's like, guys, why don't we just get on this thing, which, you know, the whole rest of the world has embraced and every other state in the country. But no, it's so, there's a lot of other things I feel like on the kind of priority list here. So it's, but in saying that, things are becoming, it's a slow moving thing. Like, I'm in every UFO Facebook group in all the different states and cities, and every day people are posting videos and photos. A lot of them, you know, people are like, that's a drone, or, you know, that's, you know, a satellite, what kind of have you. But there's definitely a lot of activity, like people are looking at the skies. And even once again, like, even I was just added into a Yowie group the other day, and people, you know, will find strange artifacts like footprints, or, you know, even I guess brush kind of being destroyed by something large. So there's always, it's like anywhere, there's always things going on, but I feel like a lot of it isn't known, or it kind of just gets missed unless you're kind of actively in those groups, or, you know, I guess kind of seeking that sort of subject matter.
I think it's one of those strange things. I think sometimes, I think culturally as well, Australia often gets overlooked. But I mean, a lot of me and my friends and people in our side of the hemisphere, Dylan, have been really taken this year, because obviously Talk to Me has been such an amazingly successful film. And I was blown away. I've always had a love of strange and weird films from Australia ever since I saw Razorback as a young person. And so I've always had a real interest in keeping my eye on, because I'm a big fan of horror films and monster films as well. And so it really blew me away. I wasn't expecting it to be so good. So I think you can see as well that Australia's sort of embracement of weird culture seems to be developing as well, a lot quicker than it had been. And it does seem that as the internet has become as pervasive as it is around the world, a lot more people are beginning to uncover some of these wonderful cases from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, and I love that you touched on Talk to Me, because that was one of my favorite horror films I've seen in such a long time. It was a very fresh take. And even those directors, they're from South Australia, and I've followed their work for years, you know, even back when I was in high school and they were doing, you know, comedy videos. So to see the progression, then to see it taken to the, you know, the world stage and people going like, whoa, Australia is actually capable. Because, you know, even, yeah, maybe 10 years ago, like the Babadook happened here as well. And I think that's once again right up there with something that's actually genuinely frightening too, in terms of horror. So Australia definitely does get overlooked. And once again, like Australians kind of shit themselves in the foot as well, because often they don't even want to embrace Australian culture. Like Australian cinema, Australians don't always like it. And it's like, well, if we don't like it, how can you kind of expect others to like it, because their accents are weird or whatever, you know. So there's a lot of like tall poppy kind of syndrome in this country, and I feel like even when we're aware of it, we always kind of like tear ourselves down and kind of others, it's like, no, you shouldn't be trying to do something for yourself, or, you know, it's really strange. But honestly, yeah, the amount of especially like music and cinema that comes out of this country is it's phenomenal. And, you know, even with like podcasting too, like that's really picked up here as well. So it's an exciting time, I think, for Australian artists and creators, you know, and it's good that people can actually, you know, be aware of it and know that stuff is kind of always happening, but we just might not, you know, be able to sort of get through that market as easy as, you know, like the sort of North America or even Europe. But yeah, things are always happening, so it's always something to keep an eye out for.
Mm. I think what surprised a lot of people, not for me personally, Dylan, but I think because Talk To Me came at the subject in a really fresh way, because obviously using an alleged disembodied hand from a psychic as the contact to the spirit realm was something quite unusual, because obviously there's a kind of look back at the old sort of hand of glory that comes from witchcraft and that kind of belief system. But I think the way it was done and the fact that it was the debut feature, I believe, for the people involved in the film, for it to be as polished and as original as it was, with lots of strange aspects, like the main character isn't particularly likable. There's some weird symbolism, as in the incident at the beginning of the film with the
kangaroo,
and you think, there's something not really quite right going on here, and this kind of, is it all in her head? Is it real? What's going on here? Is it some kind of addiction that seems to be going on? And that aspect of it all, there, it becomes addictive, which I think anybody that's sort of tampered with the world of the paranormal, especially with sort of Ouija boards and things, I remember when we were kids and we got into it, I could see the parallels in that kind of, oh, it's really great fun. But it's that kind of, be careful what you wish for, and you get too deep, and it shows that progression of it going from fun to addiction on a paranormal sense, which I think a lot of films have never really sort of dove into before, which is why I really enjoyed it.
I agree. The symbolism of that, you know, of kids hanging out and, I guess, you know, always sort of doing things they're not supposed to, sort of bring in that paranormal aspect and the occult, you know, is, because I never really got that chance to sit around with a bunch of people and use a Ouija board. Like, I have used one, but it was always like sort of by myself. And even now, like most people I associate myself with, if I was to pull it out, they'd be like, no, I'm not, because people just know now, you know what I mean? It's like they've seen enough films, they've heard enough stories that people just don't want to mess with it. And it's kind of good because, you know, depending on how you kind of find your beliefs, or, you know, if you've actually experienced anything using one, my whole thing is like, it's a tool, right? So depending on your intention, if you're going to use one, I think just be respectful, because maybe it is nothing and it is all, you know, self-controlled through, you know, sort of subconscious movement and what kind of have you, or you could actually be communicating with something, and I think it's just important to just be very mindful of that, because it is a tool that could be used for that method. And if you're just kind of, you know, having a bit of a laugh, you know, once again, be careful what you wish for, because that's what I've always said. If you find yourself in a position where you've opened something and something attaches itself to you, that's very hard to come to that conclusion and then to actually seek help for that. You know, the amount of people you kind of hear of who get ill for unknown reasons, and it actually seems like there's actually something that's attached themselves to that person, and medical, you know, medical professionals can't actually figure that out, you know, and you kind of have to go a different route. That would be a situation that you just wouldn't want to find yourself in, you know. So it's pretty frightening stuff, some of this material, you know. As interested as I find we are, sometimes, you know, just you just speak to enough people and you're like, wow, there can be very big consequences to some of the actions that people take when delving into, you know, some of the subject matter.
I suppose as well with your particular show, Dylan, and the format of it, is this kind of a subject you've seen more people open up to over the last few years in regards to pushing the boundaries of the paranormal and investigations? Because as I said earlier on, I've been really interested, especially one of the great things about YouTube and things like that, is that it allows people from outside of certain territories to uncover amazing cases and shows that we were never aware of. So I've always been really interested in delving into things because, especially when it comes to Australia, you've got sort of two or three cases. And yet, especially in ufology, I think, Dylan, there's sort of, for me, there's three big cases, I think, that anybody, unless they're as immersed in this subject as we are, that they seem to be sort of your ufology rock stars, as it were, in regards to the cases. People can say similar things about things from the UK as well. But are you surprised that when people from outside of Australia look towards some of your most famous cases, it tends to be, you know, the three big ones, I think, are Fred Valentich, the Westall case, which has seen so many parallels with other school-based sightings.
I know, right?
And one of my particular favourite ones, primarily because of everything that happened afterwards, is the Knowles family incident from the Narrabour Plains.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, those are three heavy hitters for sure.
I wouldn't say it's a frustration, Dylan, for a native when they're discussing their big cases. Are you surprised that people keep going back to those particular ones, or do you think it's because they're all very strange in very different ways that it's easy to understand as an Australian why people seem to be continually attracted to those particular aspects of Australian ufology?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially when you can really draw a lot of similarities between those cases and others, you know, and especially something like Westall, for example, took place in, you know, 1966, I believe. So at a time, especially keep in mind, Australia was very behind on a lot of things. So, you know, it wasn't like you would have been hearing what was kind of going on with, you know, like a Betty and Barney Hill case. You know what I mean? Like that would have not been on anyone's radar. And then even, you know, fast forward to the 90s when in Zimbabwe they had the aerial school account as well, which is very similar to Westall, you know, these craft showing themselves to schools, you know, which I've even really thought about the substantial means around that, you know what I mean? Like beings being seen or, you know, a craft landing and children being able to get close enough. And, you know, I know we're talking about Australia, but the Zimbabwe case is fascinating that children were getting these visions from these beings of sort of world destruction and so on. And, you know, maybe that could be related to the Westall thing as well, you know, these children. And then the Westall thing's really interesting too, because it was kind of covered up and silenced, you know, like it seemed like the Americans kind of got involved and kind of came to the school. They had a big school assembly telling the kids not to talk about what they saw. You know, a teacher snapped photos of these craft and her camera was confiscated, like not just the film, the entire camera. Even news reportings, they should be in the archive of I think like the ABC going down and interviewing these kids, and that's all vanished. Like everything was gone until maybe in the last 10, 20 years when I guess, you know, the internet kind of became more of a thing and, you know, everyone could actually get back in contact. And now, you know, it's kind of like the case has been reopened in a sense. But once again, it's so much time has passed. Who knows if anything else really come from it? I feel like that's the unfortunate thing with a lot of these cases. It's like so much time goes on, things kind of get forgotten about, and who's to say anything more will kind of come out. But I definitely think there's a reason why those cases, and even, you know, another case that is one of my favorites is the Kelly Cahill case, where in the mid-90s she and her husband came in had an encounter with these beings. But there was another another four witnesses in two separate vehicles who also saw these beings and the UFO craft, and none of them ever met, but they all had the same story, were able to draw the same craft, draw these beings. There was magnetic activity in the field they were taken from, even triangular burns in the ground. They even had burn marks. Older women had these triangle burn marks on their stomachs as well.
Mm.
It was just really bizarre, like a really bizarre case. And I feel like in the last few years, there's been a lot more. I think there's a lot more like YouTube videos on it. So it has kind of become more in the know. But it's kind of one of those cases that, in terms of like the worldwide spectrum, having six witnesses all seeing the same thing from different points of view, all the women having the same burn marks, even they all had quite a bad like menstrual cycle afterwards, which lasted weeks, like all of them. And Kelly even had migraines for months that doctors couldn't make any sense of. And she eventually, you know, she was kind of keeping a journal of all of these happenings, and she eventually published that book, I think in 96. So we've kind of got her full account over those, you know, over those months of her kind of coming to the conclusion of having this really obscure abduction, you know. And so that's the thing, like, as you mentioned, you know, does Australia kind of have these cases? And honestly, it does. I feel like the few that are really known, quite substantial. And then, you know, I've even spoken to people, our fellow Australians, who have had abductions. But once again, you know, there was never any coverage because they keep it to themselves, you know. So one of the most troubling interviews I think I've done was with a young woman who, from memory, I think she was based in Sydney. And she was someone who a lot of the people I get to speak to, after they start to have experiences, they become quite interested in the phenomena. If they weren't previous to it, just due to the strangeness, I guess they want to seek out answers, you know. It makes total sense. But this woman had no interest, you know. The what was happening to her really frightened her, you know. She would go to bed and then kind of wake up in different clothes, you know, in a different part of her house. Even one day she was driving home and then she lost about an hour of time. She was on a road, pulled over somewhere she's never been before, and all this really strange kind of happenings. And she didn't even realize that missing time was a really key element to abduction until she sort of was telling me her story. I was like, you know, that's a massive red flag when it comes to this. She wasn't even aware. So I think that kind of really, I mean, I think she was quite panicked about all that, because I think it was really just setting in her mind that what she was experiencing is not, it was hard to sort of deny. I'm like, this is almost like to the point, like a textbook kind of example of abduction. But she was really troubled by that, and it was hard. It's hard to have those conversations with people because she's never really opened up about it. And even after the interview, she's like, I don't think I'm really going to talk about this from now on. And I was like, well, look, you can definitely reach out again, or, you know, there are groups as well you can get in touch with who, you know, will be able to lend a shoulder if you need. And just, I think it's just good to kind of talk about it because it is quite traumatic. And then, you know, I've spoken to a few other Australians as well who, you know, have had a multitude of different experiences with this phenomenon, you know, seeing craft, of course, but also having these abductions. And it's definitely prevalent. I think it's a worldwide thing. I don't think there's any sort of discriminatory means to it. Depending on where you live, it does seem like it does happen everywhere. And to, you know, people from a lot of different backgrounds who, I mean, most people I speak to, it's not something that they're really vocal about. And I totally get it, you know. Like, I've had strange experiences, and you don't necessarily go and start telling everyone you meet, you know. You're really careful,
yeah,
with that kind of material. But yeah, it's definitely prevalent in Australia, but unlike maybe, you know, like the USA, it does go unheard and kind of unnoticed quite a fair bit.
I suppose on either aspect of that, in regards to the lady you've just been speaking about there, Dylan, you've got two sides to that. You've either got a medical condition which is causing this lady to, I would imagine, believe she might be delusional, or she's having some kind of mental health crisis, or when she finally finds a soundboard where you've got that knowledge and that experience about not necessarily the rules, but as you were mentioning, the red flags that appear. I mean, that just sounds baffling. You know, appearing in coming round in different rooms in your house, wearing different clothes, appearing on roads you've no idea how you've got there. To then be able to, I suppose, as you refer to there, it would be quite frightening, because especially when you have someone that's had an experience that has no interest or real knowledge of the subject, I suppose it's earth-shattering, because it takes them out of the parameters of what they consider to be normal or reality as they've always known it, to then be aware of what could be, I suppose, is deeply troubling. And I find it quite surprising that when I've spoken to people or I've shared experiences with some people, that often they seem to find it quite cathartic. They feel relieved to have shared it, or to have someone who will listen to them without sort of poo-pooing them or thinking they're a bit out there. So for her to then come to the realization that it probably, talking about it, probably frightened her more, because then she realized that perhaps, however she'd comprehended what was happening to her, she's now got a whole new look at it and thought, I don't think I can deal with this.
Yeah, I know. It was one of the hardest conversations I probably had to have had with someone. You know, because I do the podcast because I love the strange, the unusual, you know, and I guess it has become quite a big part of my life. And, you know, I look forward to getting to have these conversations, or when I'm doing the solo episodes, you know, it's a release for me, you know, and getting to have people on and to talk about their stories, you know, it does a lot for them. I mean, people have different outcomes from it, but I feel like a lot of people do just enjoy, because, you know, they're sort of marginalized, you know, they can't talk about this, or if they do, they're very careful, but they know that, you know, it's the same with what you do too. You kind of create these circles of people who are going to be listening, and they're going to be interested, you know, so they feel safe to some extent, I suppose, to just let it all out. And when I finished recording that episode, it was hard to even just go about the rest of my day, because I was like, a lot of these, you know, some people have negative kind of experiences, some people have more kind of positive. It's hard to say why exactly one person has a very different experience and can kind of come away okay, and someone's actually quite troubled and disturbed by it. So when you do have those conversations, yeah, it's pretty difficult, and you feel pretty helpless too, you know, and every time I have conversations with people, it kind of is always just reinforcing what I am sort of discovering, or maybe what I believe. So when someone has had such a negative experience with this phenomena, it's hard to, I mean, I've kind of just gotten like another piece of the puzzle, I suppose, for my own research and, I guess, like self-discovery and how I fit into this phenomena. But it's like, at what cost, you know, someone, this poor woman is having a really tough time with this phenomena, you know. So there's a lot of aspects to this material which you don't really realize until you kind of live and breathe it, you know, like the amount of people who just reach out and just like, hey, I've just seen this weird thing and I just need to tell someone that is just going to listen. And, you know, it's weird that I've kind of become that person for some people, but I mean, I'm glad it is me, because, you know, people do need to be heard with this material, just because, you know, and it doesn't really matter what I think, you know, because I've had weird experiences, and sometimes they've been isolated just by myself, or I've experienced things with other people. Mm. And, you know, when you have these, it's like you can't even describe the sensation you get when something like this phenomena shows itself. It's like you have to be there to really comprehend how substantial it was, you know, it just being like, I saw this thing. It's like, okay, that's great. But people just don't really understand the sense that you got when you're in the room, or how meaningful it can often be too, you know? So it's hard to, it's really hard to make sense of all that for a lot of people. So my only job is to really let people speak their truth, or, you know, for me to even speak mine, and kind of just, if it's real for them, then who am I to, you know, pick apart their stories, you know, and so on. It's definitely just an outlet, and I'm glad that I can offer that. You know, it's something I didn't even realize was going to sort of come out of the podcast, but it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, you'd be in a very similar situation too, where when people know that you're open to these topics, they feel safe to just be like, oh, I've got a story, or, you know, I know someone has a story, and, you know, it's quite good that we can kind of have these conversations and really, I don't know, just learn more about the unknown.
How were you sort of focused in regards to your appreciation or understanding of ufology past the typical kind of sighting experience? Because I've said this before, Dylan, that I used to be very, very skeptical about the abduction phenomenon, primarily because I probably watched too many strange interviews in the 90s, I think, from people that was like, I'm not too sure about this. Whereas yeah. I was very sort of, if you'd have asked me 5 years ago, I'd have said I didn't think much to any of it. Now, after speaking with several people, discovering more cases, looking at more research, discovering the body of work that had come before, I'd really sort of appreciated it and opened myself up to the possibility. I think I really didn't have any kind of grasp of the psychological impacts that were affecting people, because often, as you've mentioned there, you have these people that always go on about it being a peaceful kind of symbiotic relationship of sharing of knowledge, and they feel special, and we look at what went on in the US in the 50s with some of the abductee phenomenons that built up as almost like some kind of quasi religious followings for certain people, and they were able to, I'm not necessarily, I would suggest a cult, but I mean, there are some aspects from some of those cases from the 50s and 60s where it did seem to be very much this is a belief system that cannot be shaken or broken by anybody from the outside, regardless, that I now have a far more sympathetic understanding to people that have these claims and these interests. I'm still surprised when I, because it's not a situation or a subject. I've never had one of my best friends, despite the fact that they all know I'm a bit of a strange person in regards to what I enjoy, and I've had friendships, you know, going back 30, 40 years now, Dylan. None of my immediate best friends have ever come to me and said, I think I've been taken, or to talk about it in a proper. I had a couple of friends, one I shared with, even though I was sort of there at the tail end of what had happened, that claimed to have had a very disturbing sighting. But it really has sort of made me realise that even though I used to think I was quite open-minded and knew a bit about certain aspects of it, I realised, looking back, I knew next to nothing.
Yeah, it's like, that's a really interesting outlook, because I kind of feel the same until I started, I guess, speaking with people who, you know, were claiming to have these experiences. It's kind of like, what's it really mean? You know, the idea of abduction. And I guess until I had the platform where I could speak with everyday experiences, you only kind of know those big cases typically, you know, like which you can read in a book or watch a documentary on. You don't really, well, now you kind of have a little bit more access with Reddit and so on. There's a lot of first-hand accounts being posted there every day. But yeah, I didn't even really understand the amount of people, and even just the differences as well. It's kind of like every time I speak with someone, it's hard, because you always kind of make, I guess, like assumptions on what the phenomena is, and then someone will say something to you, and it's like, well, how does that fit into my understanding of this? You know, I've never heard of that, or even the beings maybe they've seen don't really match the description of anything. But then I put the episode out and someone sends an email saying, I've seen that exact thing, can you put me in touch with that person? And it's like, okay, well, so be it, you know. But yeah, it's like, it's been a massive journey of the last 7 years or so, and it's kind of been the thing that the podcast has kind of been really focused on, I suppose. And it is the thing that I've been the most interested in, is the abduction phenomena. because it's kind of, I always kind of say it, it's like, if you've seen a UFO, it's kind of not trendy, but it's, you can say, oh yeah, I did see a weird light in the sky. I don't currently make any sense of that. And that's kind of, now it's kind of a little bit more of the norm. You know what I mean? You're not, it's fine, you know, but if you were to say, I think I've been abducted, that is where you're really ridiculed. And that's, I mean, just the word abducted is, you know, it's not a nice word at all. And obviously some people, as we sort of said, as you mentioned, you know, kind of find it to be maybe a spiritual or quite a, I don't know, they almost wait for these experiences to take place, you know, and maybe some people do claim to feel like maybe they are sort of chosen or that they're special. And that's fine. You know, that's their experience that they're obviously having for whatever reason. But then, yeah, over here you do have the more traumatic, darker kind of sides of the phenomena, which is always kind of what more so drew me in, I would say, where it is this really unsettling, I don't know, topic. And it's, I agree, it's what do you really make of it? And all I can say is it's, you know, I'm constantly sort of fighting with my own beliefs, and not necessarily that I'm like, I believe, I don't. It's just kind of to what extent, you know. And sometimes you speak with someone who's just so compelling, you know, because like you'll speak for a little bit before you might do the interview, and you stop the interview and you talk afterwards. There's been a few times this year where I've almost, which is actually quite a new thing, is you've kind of actually formed a bit of a relationship with that person where you actually will speak afterwards, you know, we'll kind of like message being like, hey, I just uncovered this thing. Is this kind of relevant or what kind of have you? Like, there's kind of been a bit more of that just in the last few months, which I feel like is all kind of connected to this greater, I don't know, it sounds like kind of wanky, but this kind of greater journey that I'm kind of, I've been weirdly on, which the podcast kind of encapsulates, just kind of, you know, figuring out why I'm sort of drawn to this, you know, is there something more to all of this? But I don't know. And it always just comes back to the abduction thing. And I feel like, yeah, it's, I'm so drawn to it and kind of just like deeply routed in it now that it's really hard to make sense of it. And it's hard to, even I, you know, struggle to talk about it. Like, I only just kind of spoke to my wife really about it recently, where I was like, well, what are your thoughts on it? Because I felt like I kind of knew, but I was like, I don't know if I've ever really had that conversation being like, what do you make of this? And she's, you know, like, she's very open to things. And she's like, well, you know, if enough people are saying they've seen something, then, you know, who are we to judge that? Because I feel like that is actually great evidence, you know, is these firsthand experiences from people from all different walks of life. You know what I mean? Like people who have no reason to lie or to fabricate. You know what I mean? I think like we need to sort of like move past the thing of like, is it actually happening or isn't it? It's kind of like, well, what is the purpose of this and why, you know, why are so many people affected by it? Yet there's nowhere to really turn to outside of, I guess, you know, the sort of circles that we all kind of create within this phenomena, you know.
I think as well it's probably harder in the modern era, as strange as that may sound, Dylan, because you only have to look at the situation that both John Mack and Bud Hopkins found themselves in, that they were professionally and personally attacked for delving into the abduction phenomenon in a balanced and open way. You know, it doesn't take much looking into to see the kind of attacks that Mack was going under when he was at Harvard, and people were saying he was professionally out of his depth, and he was bringing disdain and ridicule to his profession, which I find one of those strange things, especially when you're dealing with psychology. Once again, it seems to be there are certain topics that people are very open to accepting on a professional and scientific level, and then there are others where they go, no, that's just delusion, that's mental illness. They want attention. And I find the argument in a sceptical sense in regards to abductees and experiences that they all want attention and financial reimbursement seems to show a real lack of understanding of how these people are often treated by society outside of people such as ourselves and researchers, because often they are ridiculed, they are shunned, they are dismissed. And as I've often said jokingly to people, how many abductees do we know who are millionaires?
Yeah, I know. Show us one. You're exactly right, though. I don't disregard the thing that the argument that people could be having delusions, and you know, there's like anything, you have to kind of look for other explanations. But I think it's always interesting the ones who kind of aren't aware of the phenomena, or I don't know, they're just so compelling in their stories, you know. But yeah, it is great that there have been, you know, people like Bud Hopkins and so on who have, you know, it was their life work, you know, and I hope that people kind of continue to try to, you know, expose the truth within this phenomenon, because I think it is, honestly, I think it's actually very important, because if everything that has, you know, that is uncovered every day by people's experiences and so on, like, I feel like there's actually quite a big, well, I don't know, maybe not issues the word, but there's quite a big collective happening that's going on, and surely we should be looking at it, you know, from a lot of different perspectives of, you know, like a science or even just a, you know, a social kind of aspect as well. Like, it's weird that it all kind of goes on, and you know, it's all kind of either just hidden because people don't feel like they can talk about it, or a number of different reasons. But if everything is actually happening that people are claiming and that we kind of suspect is happening, it's like, I think that it's pretty alarming, in all honesty. And I mean, I don't really know what that all means, but I'm glad that people, you know, have spent their life really researching and being, you know, very, very level-headed people, you know, people who I believe were doing it for the right reasons, you know.
Absolutely. And I think even when it comes to a belief standpoint, I'm sometimes taken aback that there seems to be, even for people that investigate certain phenomena, Dylan, there seems to be lines that people won't cross, as if that even though we're dealing about strange topics and odd experiences, there are certain things that people go, oh, well, that's a bit too weird for me. I'm not crossing that line, regardless of the phenomena that they're investigating. And I think I'm more surprised to see those kinds of rules when we're discussing topics such as ufology or the paranormal or cryptids, that some people go, no, well, I'm not interested in that. Or if there is a strange event or someone comes forward with an incident of varying forms, if they then mention something else, it depends on the researcher that they're speaking to, because sometimes people will discuss things and they'll say, oh, well, this has happened as well. But the person that they're speaking to has no interest in the additional information. Maybe, you know, obviously for you guys down there, there's a lot of people who have Yowie sightings or encounters such as that. And then the area will also perhaps either, there'll be sightings of UFOs or strange lights in the sky or abductions occurring, or they'll also see, once again, similar to here in the UK, giant black cats completely out of place, which people don't think, you know, once again, not native to Australia, as mysterious as the sightings are in the UK. But they've been going on for decades. So it's one of those frustrations, I think, sometimes when we are as open-minded and as interested in different facets of Fortiana, that when we look back at some research or we speak to more open-minded researchers, it makes you wonder how many sort of pockets of high strangeness are overlooked because the person investigating it only wants to know about the UFO, or they only want to know about the cryptid. They're not bothered about anything that overlaps.
Yeah, and you see it time and time again, and I feel like we probably all catch ourselves doing it when you come across something and you struggle to kind of comprehend it, so you go, oh, maybe it's best just kind of left. But I try to, when I speak with people, depending on what the topic is, I'll say, have you had any other unusual experiences? And how often they'll say, yeah, like if they've, you know, had UFO abduction kind of experiences, like how often they might have poltergeist or haunting type experiences, you know. Or I just feel like it's all weirdly connected, and I don't know if it's a certain kind of person who is more open to having these experiences, you know, so they're open to more phenomena, or even the argument that it is all actually connected, and depending on what your experience is and how you actually, you know, make sense of it, it could be similar phenomena for someone else, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to say because it's all susceptible to that person, you know? That's what I always kind of harp on about, like, you need to be the one to be in that situation, really, to fully grasp what that is, you know? But, yeah, I've definitely found myself trying to be more open to things, like when people describe seeing, you know, small kind of beings, almost like gremlins or goblins. It's like, that sounds not like kind of, I think it's just because it's so caught up in, I guess, like more of a fiction and almost like a fantasy kind of thing. But it's like when you open yourself up to, well, whatever that thing is, maybe it's showing itself in a different way due to culture or climate, you know, it's hard to kind of say. But yeah, you hit a great point of why do we see big cats, big black cats all around the world where they're not native and things like that, where it's not even paranormal per se, but it's like you go speak to a zoologist and they'll say, no, there's no chance that there's a large black cat hanging around. And it's like, well, what are people seeing? What are these photos of? You know, so if people can't even comprehend just an animal being out of its normal environment, like then, you know, it's very easy to just completely disregard everything else, isn't it? You know, and it's you know, as I said, I've caught myself numerous times doing that where someone's telling you a story or you're reading something and you're like, what? I don't even know what that could be. But I mean, someone has seen it. And, you know, if they've, you know, potentially even found a bit of evidence like a photo or who knows what, then it's like it's just kind of something else to add to the pile, I suppose, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think as well, one of the things I sort of really moved along with was people's encounters with the Fae. Because once again, Dylan, I think I used to consider myself very open-minded. I clearly wasn't anywhere near as open-minded as I am now. And often, especially when we're talking about the UFO phenomenon, people will say, oh, well, it's just a continuation of the experiences people used to have, and people don't see fairies and goblins and gremlins anymore. They see greys or Nordics or whatever. And you think, well, okay. Now, clear from the people I've got to know, the shows I've discovered, the witnesses I've heard from, there's clearly things running parallel, which are not the same thing. And I think to explain one away with a modern reinterpretation of what people claim to be happening is very interesting, because if you say to people, oh, well, nobody sees fairies anymore or the Fae, they're just seeing the greys, then people say, well, what about this particular case? And when you look at them, they're not the same kind of thing. They're clearly very different things that are going on. So you can't say one is the other when people are seeing both and they're having very different experiences.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, there are times, I suppose, where they could be similar, but yeah, those are two very different experiences. And it's hard. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? Because I guess if people are seeing it and the way that they're seeing it, you have to kind of just take it at face value, don't you? You know, it's very hard. And I think it's even the thing of conceptualizing something and actually seeing it. I mean, imagine seeing something like a fae. Like, what's that actually embody, you know, to actually see it in the flesh, and then to try to make sense of that? You know, there's a lot of aspects of play at play when you see these things that you didn't actually think exist. And all of a sudden it's like, what is that? You know, and I guess you kind of make sense. Your mind can rationalize it as much as possible. But yeah, I agree. I think there are definitely these overlapping kind of crossovers, but it does seem like a lot of this phenomena, you know, have it be your sort of Sasquatch, you know, all around the world, or your gray type beings, or, you know, whatever kind of cryptid or what have you. Like, there does seem to be these characteristics, and they do sort of follow you know, this phenomena kind of, you know, has these traits, and you kind of can start to put them in, you know, well, this is a Sasquatch kind of happening, and this is something else, you know. So we kind of have broken that stuff up, but yeah, who's to say, I suppose, that they kind of aren't all connected or could potentially be the same thing. But it does get very murky, because you can kind of just get too caught up in that. And it's like, well, what's anything really? You know what I mean? It's all just people just having strange experiences. But yeah, I feel like you make a great point there of it is very easy to kind of say, like, well, it's all the same thing. People just witness it in different ways. And which could definitely happen, and I think that does happen. But at the same time, if people are having very similar experiences with this one particular phenomenon, it doesn't seem relevant. It's the old argument of, you know, is Bigfoot, is it paranormal, or is it, you know, just an undiscovered creature walking around? And, you know, you could have a whole episode just on that, you know, of people, because people are going to have very different opinions. And it's like, you know, here's this topic that's already, you know, people won't even believe it. And then you're having the argument of, you know, can it actually vanish and appear? Is that why no one ever sees it? And it kind of, that sort of argument, I guess, kind of ruins the whole mystique, I think, around it, because then it's, you're kind of just making answers for something that's very complex. You know what I mean? Being like, oh, well, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, well, it was here yesterday and now it's just gone, because it's, you know, it's more paranormal than an actual living, breathing creature, you know? So that's the thing with the paranormal, like, I feel like it's a constant battle, isn't it? Is people, I guess, trying to find answers, and sometimes those answers kind of just really wash the actual, I don't know, maybe some of the proof that people are bringing forward, or some of the actual interesting points to things, you know? But I guess the hard thing is at the end of the day, we never actually get solid answers. So we are always kind of thinking and over, you know, just kind of going over this material, and everyone has their valid opinion, but yeah, it's a very slippery slope to kind of find ourselves on, you know, especially being podcasters in this kind of field. It's a constant battle with what does any of it really mean. You know, you feel like you get answers, then tomorrow it's all kind of thrown out the window, and it's a constant battle, for sure.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think as well, as I was saying about the rules of investigation that some people have, even though they're talking about really weird things, the one thing I've never come to grips with is when people talk about Bigfoot or Sasquatch or Yowies, and they talk about these creatures, and there'll be certain other reports where they'll say, oh yeah, well, it just disappeared. And I don't understand how people make a leap from it being a flesh and blood creature to being an alien, or predator cloaking, which seems to be a thing recently, to completely avoid discussing the fact that, well, maybe we've seen a ghost of something, rather than suddenly thinking, oh, well, this must be some kind of alien with supreme technology that can cloak itself. When, if you only open up slightly into the supernatural and ghosts, I would be amazed if there's an animal people haven't had a ghostly encounter with, Dylan. And so when they're talking about certain witnesses or experiences in hairy hominids, where the witness says, well, it just disappeared, or it seemed to walk into a tree, certain people will go, oh, well, that's clearly it's cloaking then. Not, and the discussion that they may have seen a ghost of a primeval creature from the past. No, nobody seems to think, oh, maybe it's that. There are these little facets of explanation where people seem to jump five steps forward rather than looking at everything, because as I was saying earlier on, and as you mentioned as well, some people just won't entertain certain aspects of Fortiana because they're not interested in it, or they don't have any experience in it.
That's exactly it, isn't it? It's like one person's opinion versus like another, and it is hard. And I guess there's no real governing body with this. You know, there's no council to be like, this is what this phenomena is, and, you know, this is what we know about it. It's people from all different walks of life trying to make sense of something that's, I think, very complex. Otherwise, I feel like we'd have the answers. You know, I feel like you'd be able to grab one of these creatures, put it in a box and study it, you know what I mean? But we can't. And I guess that's the argument. People go, this stuff doesn't exist because we can't physically get a hold of it. We can't dissect it. We can't study it. But it's like, I feel like what we're dealing with is far more, you know, in terms of the UFO abduction stuff, yeah, it's kind of far more advanced. But even something like Sasquatch, which seems to be as old, you know, as the Earth, you know, so many like native Australians throughout the times, you know, drawing these creatures, or, you know, telling them through their dreamtime stories, you know, they predate man. So, you know, they're kind of just a part of the Earth, you know. Yeah. So you're dealing with very different phenomena there. And like, you kind of, it would be great if, you know, all this phenomena we could actually get a hold of and study, but it's just, I don't think because we can't do that doesn't make it any less real. I think it's just something that is far more complex and often quite important too, you know, like something like Yowie's, you know, it's, I feel like it's a very important part of, well, just the foundation of our traditional owners of the land, you know? So it'd be great. Yeah. If we could just easily, have those answers, but for whatever reason we can't. And there's enough, I think there's enough evidence of, especially things like Yowie's, where it's a ton of eyewitness sightings. I feel like we have some great footage and photo, because everyone's always asking, like, well, what have you seen? And I show it to them and they don't want to believe it. So I don't really know what else you can kind of do. And now my whole argument is, like, you know, technology, AI is getting that advanced, that are we ever really going to believe anything that we see again? You know what I mean? So it's kind of, I feel like a lot of those older cases, a lot of the older evidence is probably going to be held in such a high regard because it was from a time where it was far harder to manufacture evidence. And now it's kind of like the betting's off, really. Like, anyone could make anything, or I don't know. That's a very interesting kind of world I think we're going to find ourselves in, is, UFO sightings are probably going to be, they're going to look amazing all of a sudden, you know, it's going to easily make one. And it's just like, you know, if this phenomenon really wanted to show itself, it would, but obviously for whatever reason it chooses to be more discreet and for obvious reasons, I suppose, because it does seem like, they're doing something that they don't need everyone to be aware of, you know? So it's very complex, as you would know.
Yeah.
I wish we could easily come to conclusions with this stuff, but we can't. I think that's the appeal of it as well, is, always thinking and always discussing these topics. I wish I was kind of interested in something which could be easily, look like, oh, what if I was just into golf or something? But yeah, everyone knows what golf is and they can enjoy that. But it's like, well, I'm not, unfortunately. I like this stuff. It's not very easily accessible for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I think that's human nature, isn't it? We always try and find explanations for anything, whether we mean to or not. And I think sometimes it's easier to leap, as with certain explanations about certain phenomena, Dylan, it's easier to leap to a rational explanation, even though sometimes the rational explanation makes as less sense as somebody having a very odd experience. Be it, there is often, as you refer to there, this kind of dismissal of indigenous populations' experiences and petroglyphs, because there is this kind of cultural snobbery saying, oh, it always amazes me when people have petroglyphs and they'll be all the animals that we're aware of, and then there'll just be this giant hairy man, and people will go, yeah, that's a dream. Everything else is real, but that one's a dream, because we don't have any frame of real reference for that creature in our understanding of the modern world and the fauna of a certain location. And I find that seems to be something that is becoming less and less, and people are now looking back at indigenous populations' experiences and stories and art and culture and looking at it in a more balanced way, because there is this kind of dismissal, which I've never really settled on being comfortable with in certain fields, that Bigfoot didn't exist in North America till 1958, which I think is one of those amazingly odd academical aspects of ignorance, where they completely dismiss everything that came before that particular period because they either can't be bothered to look at it, they've no real interest in it, they're already deciding that they don't believe in any of this, so they've no interest in looking at it. And yet, all you have to do is look at newspaper reports, you look at indigenous cultures, different tribes, and I've said this before, how can tribes in the south of the US have similar stories to people that were wandering around the northern areas of Canada? There is no way that these people from 6,000 miles apart were hanging around together talking about stuff, because that is even less compelling than saying that these people were all seeing similar things of varying shapes and sizes and colours. But to suggest that a tribe from Saskatchewan were hanging around and talking to people who lived in Louisiana is nonsensical.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense, does it?
No. And it's the same in Australia. Why would why would the Indigenous Australians who live in the Northern Territories have same stories and cultures to people that lived in Western Australia? I mean, I think it's one of those things sometimes, Dylan, especially when they talk about Australia. A lot of people from outside of the country have no idea how big Australia is. They just seem, I'm not sure, I think they think it's the same size as the UK sometimes, which is, obviously, I think the UK can fit in Australia about 50 times or something strange.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's literally, I think it's like the same sort of land mass as the entirety of Northern America.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, it's literally, you know, so I'm in like Brisbane to fly to Perth, which is, you know, on the other side, it's like a 6-hour flight, which is substantial. So it's like, you know, they're like 3 hours behind, yeah. You know, completely different time zone. So, and there's just so little in the middle of our country, you know, we all kind of just live along the coastline. So, you know, there's so much land that, you know, man has probably, I mean, well, modern day man has probably never stood upon, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's so vast. And yeah, the idea of, yeah, people in the Northern Territory, you know, discussing Yowie sightings with people in South Australia. It's just like, no, I don't think that's very likely at all. And even, you know, the different pockets that these people lived in, you know, they had different languages. You know what I mean? So like conversation with these different people wouldn't have been as easy as what we're, you know, talking about right now. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a nice thought, but it there were different worlds, you know, that these people were living in, yet seeing similar things. And then the fact of you can still see them to this day, I think that's a massive, I think that's just like a really great tidbit, is like we have all these sightings, you know, thousands of years ago, yet, you know, I'm sure there was probably a Yowie sighting this week, and you're like, how, like, it's just, I feel like this is very hard to deny, but yet people still will. And once again, it's like, I think, put yourself in the position of someone who's seen one of these things, because even I'm like, I don't know if I would really want to come across one, because these experiences sound terrifying. Honestly, it's probably one of the ones where I'd be like, probably happy to never really experience it, because yeah, it sounds pretty terrifying. Honestly, these massive, you know, I've heard of people seeing them here up to, you know, 8-9 feet tall, you know, have like crushed like car bonnets and so on. It's just like, it's just phenomenal, the size of these things. And yeah, I don't think you'd really want to be anywhere near one, ideally. But yeah, people have these run-ins with them all the time. And it's even interesting, like where I live, obviously over time, you know, more and more development happens, but there's national parks, you know, maybe 10 minutes from here. And up until kind of maybe the early 2000s, where a lot of houses were built, there was quite a lot of sightings in and around just where I live now. Mm. You could probably drive 10 minutes in any direction and you wouldn't be too far away from someone who's seen one of these creatures. But obviously, you know, with more and more development, there's less and less habitat in these areas. So even though I have come across sightings quite close to suburbia, if there's enough sort of bushland, I guess, for these creatures to, you know, live upon and I guess hide themselves, then, you know, they can do that. But yeah, it's an interesting thought that they probably, you know, are getting pushed further and further away. Hence why about an hour south from where I am, Springbrook National Park is quite a massive hotspot, and it being, you know, a protected park, it does seem to be, you know, I've seen casts of footprints down there and just people camping at night, smelling, you know, that odor.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe actually getting a sighting of one of these things. Yeah, it's interesting to think you could be camping and not even know that you've come in contact with one, but one, you know, could be nearby, because they do seem like the kind of creature that doesn't really want to be seen. It's often just sort of by chance you happen to cross paths. I think you're actually quite, you'd be very lucky, in inverted commas, I think, to actually see one of these things, because they're definitely not, I feel like it's, yeah, I feel like it's very much by chance. Or if you, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they wanted you to see them, but I don't know why that would be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you only have to look at perhaps probably the most famous Yowie encounter in the last few years is obviously that truck driver Gary on the Gold Coast, who came around a corner and nearly run one over. Now, to kind of dismiss him as delusional, or as is often the case, maybe he saw a kangaroo, you're just like, what? You know, here's a guy, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, it's not, you know, 3 a.m., he's not done a 7-hour drive, he's not sort of having to have 19 coffees to keep going. This is a guy just starting his working day, and for him to come eye to eye with something that he said, I think he was, because of how tall it was, he thought it must be at least 8 foot, put its hands on his bonnet and just kind of huffed at him and wandered off, and he just sat there shaking for an hour trying to come to deal with it. Having somebody come forward like that to then say, oh well, he's completely wrong, you just think, how can you pull a concept like that? Because for somebody to say, oh well, he's had some kind of delusion or a hallucination that has allowed him to break and respond and pay as much attention as he does, you would say, well, if these people are hallucinating, why is nobody seeing unicorns running about across roads and stuff? It just,
yeah,
to sort of just push it away with such a lack of respect for the witness's account, and this applies to lots of things, is I just think it's bloody rude.
It is, honestly. Like, just the lack of giving it, you know, just even a thought of, well, why, what could he have seen? You know, saying it's a kangaroo. Kangaroos don't walk.
No.
Like, they can't. And it's not like we have native large bears in this country. You know what I mean? The closest thing would be a koala, and they're not actually a bear.
Yeah.
So we actually don't have anything that is upright walking around of that size, you know what I mean? It'd be very hard to misidentify with a known creature that's out in the outback, or, you know, in the bush.
Mm.
And yeah, once again, it's just that thing of why. I mean, I feel like truck drivers are probably, you know, they probably have like a pretty good, you know, sort of bull kind of radar. Like, I don't feel like they're, you know, just kind of guys to cry wolf or anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and yeah, once again, yeah, being on the Gold Coast, once again, being especially, you know, Gold Coast has a lot of like hinterland as well. Like, it's known for its beach, but you only have to go inland and, you know, massive sort of national parks. And that's the thing. A lot of this country is untouched. So there is so much land that anything could be living out there. And when you kind of think about that, it's pretty, I mean, I'm not really someone who goes camping or anything, but that would have to be something that plays in your mind, is like, we have touched very little of this country. Who knows what's out there? And, you know, there's a ton of different kind of Australian type cryptids as well, which I haven't really done a ton of looking into, but they typically do kind of stem down from Aboriginal kind of dream time. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, Yowies, like, Cadbury made Yowie chocolate when I was a kid, and they even brought it back. You know what I mean? So it was actually, Yowies are kind of weirdly really present as a kid growing up here. And even, like, you know, my mother grew up in the Blue Mountains.
Yes.
And that's probably one of the most paranormal hotspots in the country.
Mm.
And, you know, her brothers witnessed some like eye shine in the bush one night, and they believed that to be a Yowie. And it was just a known thing that, like, parents would tell their kids, you know, don't stay out late at night because there's Yowies. And, you know, that could have been just a way to get kids back inside the house. But I think there's something very kind of like pretty cynical to that too, because the amount of sightings that would have been happening around that time, and even still to this day, of these things, there's actually some truth, I think, in that. And even just that it is actually quite a known thing in this culture, even if you're not actually so much aware of it, you've just kind of been passive to it. But thinking now back to being a kid and having, like, there was, you know, Cadbury kind of having these Yowie chocolates and, like, toys and so on, not even really comprehending what that meant, and the substantial kind of view from the Indigenous Australians, it's pretty remarkable, really, that maybe more people don't give it more time of day or anything like that. Because, yeah, it definitely seems to be quite a present thing in our culture.
Yeah. And let's be honest, Dylan, you don't need to invent scary creatures in Australia to keep kids inside. Let's be fair. There are some very keen predators out there. I'm often perplexed sometimes that people seem to focus on certain types of creature, and you only have to look at Australia's reptile population. You've got some of the most ferocious crocodiles in the world. You've got all kinds of strange, even the insects in Australia and the arachnids will finish you off, tiny things, if you're not careful. Though, once again, this is one of those misnomers about Australia, that whilst there are some dangerous spiders down there, not many people die, because Australians are very aware of their animal population and what the do's and don'ts, which is why sometimes you get stories about people being taken by crocs seems quite surprising, because people seem very aware of the dangers of certain, you know, beautiful places. You've got to be very careful. Obviously, there's a very famous story that's hit the headlines over here recently of that guy that was attacked by a croc who's managed to get away from it by biting it in the eye.
it's phenomenal. Like, I mean, where I live, like, crocs are definitely further north, but it's just wild. Cause anytime I have sort of gone, you know, to far north Queensland, it's like, I mean, you can't even really swim in the ocean because they have stingers, which are, you know, like these jellyfish pretty much. And then even crocodiles, because, you know, they're salt water, you do actually find them also just on the beach as well. So the beach isn't safe. Obviously, the creeks, it's wild. You actually will see tourists swimming in you know, river systems up there where they've even got crocodile signs, and, like, you know, they're it's a picture, so, you know, any nationality would know what that is, and it's like you would not find a local or, you know, just anyone who has ever seen a crocodile go anywhere near just even the water's edge, you know what I mean? It's just it's just off limits up there. It's like you can swim in a pool, that's fine, but outside of that, it's pretty frightening, I'd say.
Mm. So for people to think, oh, well, it's just the way to keep kids in, it's ridiculous, because I'm fascinated by cassowaries, because I just think they're just, living dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, they literally are, yeah.
You know, even down to the fact that they have, is it bright blue eggs or bright green eggs that they lay?
I think they're blue, yeah.
And they just look magical. But then, you know, I've seen footage of one guy just kept having to run around a tree for 20 minutes till it got bored, because it was like, no, you're near my nest, I'm going to gut you, because obviously they've got, not only have they got that incredible crest on their head that can do some damage, they've got that enormous claw on one of their legs, which you just think, I don't want to, you know, and they run like mad, they make funny noises. I mean, that who needs yowies when you've got them running about?
That's you're not wrong, actually. Like, there's a lot of, and that's the thing too. It's it's a big bird. You'd think, oh, how bad could it be? But it's like, those things are, I've seen them in the wild, and like they are like gorgeous, animals. But once again, it's like you wouldn't really want to cross one. You know what I mean? So that is a perception that people are right with Australia. Like, there is a lot of, very interesting critters here, but for the most part, it's just like anything, you know, like, don't leave your shoes outside because spiders can get in them, and you know, you check that sort of stuff. Or, you know, we've had a lot of rain lately, so our grass got really long in our yard, so, you know, went out there yesterday and mowed it, because it's like, I never want to have long grass because snakes, you know what I mean? Especially this time of year, you know, they'll just be out in the sun, obviously, and you're just like, you're just going to be cautious of your surroundings, you know what I mean? It's it's just one of those things, I guess. We just kind of grow up with it, you know, like wildlife is kind of here first, and you're kind of just living amongst it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Always look upwards as well. I've seen enough footage of carpet pythons dangling from ceilings to enjoying a possum or two. Dylan, over the.
It's actually probably worrying to think you're probably never that far away from a snake, because I'm not a big fan of them by any means. And I've seen a fair few, but luckily it's usually from like a distance, but it's pretty alarming that you're probably never that far away from one. It's like, oh, lovely.
Well, that's the one benefit of living in a cold northern country, is that snakes are one of the things we don't need to worry about here. The most unless, of course, you run into one of our mysterious black cats, is stumbling across an angry badger, I think, more than anything here, Dylan. So for you as well, obviously, you're somebody that's had an experience, Dylan. What happened for you personally that kind of made you comprehend that perhaps what you understood reality to be, as you were told, changed after you had your experiences?
It was not long. It was about a month after the podcast started. I'd had previous experiences, you know, with I guess, more kind of ghostly happenings and so on, which, you know, are very interesting. But a very key moment happened a month after starting the podcast, which was I was driving home and a lot of weird kind of key elements lined up where I was listening to a podcast about synchronicity and alien abduction. I was driving home thinking about a previous podcast I listened to earlier that week where a researcher was asked if she had ever had an experience with abduction, and she kind of just said, if I have, I don't recall. You know, she didn't dismiss it, but she kind of said, if I have, I don't remember it. And I never really thought about my own experiences that way. And not long before starting the podcast, I'd really gotten into like synchronicity, alien abduction, and even how owls play into that. And there's a great researcher, Mike Cleland, who's done a ton of work on that. So I was really interested in what he was kind of uncovering. And then amongst that, I started the podcast. Then it's a month later, I'm driving home with all of that kind of happening, keeping that in mind where maybe I've had an experience who I don't remember having anything, but maybe there is something, listening to that podcast about synchronicity and alien abduction. And I'm driving home, and then I'm about 2 minutes from home, and then I see an owl sitting on a street sign, and I get out, and I'm kind of just looking at this bird, and everything kind of just fell away in a sense where the last few months of doing this research with how a lot of abductees have experiences of owls either before or after their experiences, how much of a synchronicity that is for them. And I've kind of just almost created this experience right in front of me where everything kind of weirdly lined up. I'm thinking about, have I had an experience with this phenomena? And then an owl shows itself out of nowhere. And then over the next few days, I had some weird synchronicities where I had really vivid dreams of abduction. I saw another owl as well, after never having like seen a single one where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the catalyst where everything has kind of progressed to, you know, I guess we're just really diving into doing the podcast and I guess trying to tell my story and try to tell others as well, you know, through doing these interviews. And then it kind of got to the point where the other just recently I went and did some hypnosis to see if there was any memories that I didn't remember. And once again, I was pretty skeptical to that whole experience. You know, obviously it's a massive, it has been quite a prominent thing throughout abductees to have regression therapy. And a lot of people feel different ways about that. And, you know, so I kind of just approached it with a really open mind. And from doing that experience, I still don't really know what to make of all of it. But what I can say is I saw things that I didn't have any prior knowledge of. Even being someone who is very aware of what a typical abduction is, I still witnessed things in that hypnosis that I wasn't ready to kind of comprehend or could even have kind of, I did not expect it. And it's that weird thing of now I can close my eyes and those memories that I saw, I can see them as if they had actually happened as well, which I guess is the whole thing of uncovering things from your subconscious. So once again, I would love if I had actually maybe witnessed some of these things in a conscious state. And for whatever reason, I mean, from what I can tell, I would have been conscious at one point, but I don't have memory of these experiences. I'd be far more likely to kind of, you know, believe, I guess, more of myself that these things have actually taken place. But because I've only been able to sort of see them through hypnosis, I don't discredit that by any means. And, you know, anyone who has sort of gone through this experience, I definitely don't do that, discredit what you're saying. But I think it's very hard to sort of be the person that people have turning to with their experiences, and all of a sudden you realize that you might also be caught up in this, and what that kind of means for, you know, when I do the podcast, I want to kind of be, I like to think I'm kind of on the fence. Typically, you know, you always kind of, you fall in, you often kind of fall to one side, unfortunately, but, you know, that's kind of just the human thing. You know, when people are kind of pouring their heart out with some of these experiences, you know, it's pretty hard to not do that. But it's been a very interesting journey with all of this, and I'm kind of now just sitting with trying to just make sense of what may have actually taken place with me. And it kind of just feels like it's all kind of meant to have happened this way. Like, even just doing the podcast, it feels like when I said the whole wanky thing before about sort of being on this journey, it honestly, it kind of has like uncovered itself that it's all kind of meant, it's sort of has meant to have played out the way it has. And that it's bizarre to think like that, but it's kind of the answers I've gotten through these means, and just, you know, having these synchronicities that kind of every now and again pop up and kind of just make me realize that some things at play that I don't really think I have control of.
Yeah, sometimes you do come across people where it's almost as if it's meant to be, I think, Dylan. And it's quite odd, because my brother lives in Leeds, and two of the people that live, he lives in a lovely old Victorian block of flats, and he's got two neighbours. One's a 90-year-old gentleman, and the other one is a younger lady from Australia. And obviously my brother's as strange as I am, and so they often talk about strange things. And I remember going over to visit my brother, and it was a lovely day, so obviously we were eating outside, and everybody was outside, all the neighbours were there. And my brother introduced me to the lady and said, "Oh, why don't you tell Paul about what happened with you and the Min Min Lights?" And I was like, "Oh, really?" And she told me this incredible experience about what had happened with the Min Min Lights. And often people, when they try and dismiss such a phenomenon, Dylan, they will say, "Oh, well, it's, you know, reflections or whatever." But she told me this story for like 20 minutes about how there was a group of them, and they went out one night and they were chased for an hour by these lights. They all got in the car, drove off, and it followed them. Now, even in my basic understanding of physics and reflections, Dylan, that's not lights bouncing off a car or something like that. I mean, you only have to remember the famous New Year's Eve sighting that were filmed with the marvellously named Quentin Fogarty, the reporter, the Kakura lights in your neck of the woods, obviously more towards New Zealand, that one of the explanations of that was reflections of cabbages. And that has always stuck with me, as I was saying earlier. When we talk about explanations, there are some ludicrous ones. And to suggest that people were seeing the reflections of cabbages over the sea, despite the fact that they clearly filmed some very strange things going on there, was one of those things. And it was fascinating for me to speak to somebody as down to earth, who works in the financial sector, who seemed very happy to be able to talk about something without somebody telling her that she was wrong.
And that's exactly it, isn't it? It's, you have enough of those conversations with people who are very level-headed, and for them, I'm assuming they've had this experience and it's weird, but they kind of just move on with things, you know what I mean? It's not like it hasn't become like an obsession necessarily or anything, so there's no real reason to, I don't know, they're just very level-headed. They've just experienced this thing, and that's kind of it. So you speak to someone like that, and you're like, well, I don't know what that means. But, yeah, as I said, you speak to enough people in those similar situations, different walks of life, and it's pretty hard to deny, I think, those happenings. And, yeah, as you said, some of the explanations, it's like, yeah, sure, maybe in an unlikely situation that exact thing happened, like all those events lined up there, you could have this weird reflection or what kind of have you, or it is actually just one of these pretty phenomenal experiences that, you know, few people get to actually witness, just a glimpse of this strange phenomena, you know what I mean? I feel like there's sometimes, yeah, there's more, it's kind of more evidence for that than there is for, yeah, as you said, cabbages or, you know, whatever else people kind of jump to just, I guess, explain, you know, because that's the thing. As humans, we always need an explanation for everything. And that's why I think people struggle with these topics, because at the end of the day, you don't really find that explanation. And that's very against our nature. You know, and we need to know now, but it's like, well, unfortunately, it's not how this works.
Well, the other thing, I don't know if my brother chose where he lived, Dylan, on purpose or what, but the other guy, the 90-year-old, once told me this incredible story. His son lives in Australia, and he went to visit him, and he told me an abduction story. And he is somebody that has, once again, no interest in the subject, not the type of person that you would consider would be interested in the topic. He shows no kind of strange behavior. He has no issues in his personal life in regards to drinking or drugs or anything like that, whatever. And for him to have this experience where he basically went to visit his son, and on this particular night, he remembers waking up as he was floating out of the window and was taken on board a craft that was hovering above his son's garden.
Wow. And he just happened to, well, once again, you happen to be in a position where you got to hear that story.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and it's, who would have thought that would have, that he would have been able to, I don't know, it's just once again, different walks of life, having these stories. And when you get insight to them, it's pretty phenomenal, I think, just that everyone sort of knows someone or they have their own. It's just, we all know that this is happening on some sort of level, I think. It's just whether or not you choose to, I don't know, believe it or open yourself up to it, you know? Or once again, yeah, the weird thing of things happen for a reason is something that has really been hammered home for me this year. And I can't really explain why that is, but it's just that overwhelming feeling of, I feel like, yeah, everything that we encounter, like the people or experiences, it's this journey. And if you open yourself up being more aware of that, it's pretty interesting, I think, because you can really step back and realize it's like, whoa, I did not mean for all these experiences to kind of go the way they did. And then they all kind of are relevant to one another. And I'm kind of glad that I kind of have the podcast to document that, because everything that has sort of happened to me, there's an episode on it, and it's almost like maybe that was the reason to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, but it's kind of the outcome of it anyway. I mean, that's what has kind of happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's next for you and the show, Dylan? Are you wanting to sort of progress or keep sort of being a sounding board and a support for these people to be able to discuss their experiences with you? Or are you wanting to diversify or what? What where do you want your journey to take you next?
Definitely more of what I have sort of been doing with even the solo. I want to do more kind of solo episodes as well, where I pick a particular topic and really go into quite a bit of research, a lot of depth, and, you know, give my sort of thoughts and opinions around those topics. And of course, yeah, more interviews with everyday experiences. I love getting to do that. It's I feel like it's kind of the essence, I guess, of what Paranormal Thoughts has kind of become. But also I want to do, ideally, I did one a few years ago where I went and recorded a paranormal investigation in real time. And I'm kind of trying to set up a few more where, you know, potentially actually travel to do those. And yeah, just speak to more people, because I guess with those sort of things, you know, if you're with a paranormal investigator, you obviously will talk to them, get some more insight to who they are, how they kind of operate, and then actually getting to do an investigation and see what we can actually capture. More kind of things like that, I guess, like, yeah, sort of, I guess, just bigger picture sort of things, like, you know, just bringing as much as I can to those who want to listen, I suppose. And ideally, yeah, if I can kind of try to find more answers into some of my experiences as well. I'm not really sure what that looks like at the moment, but I think that's probably something that will just naturally kind of happen anyway, because it's kind of the way it's has unfolded up to this point, I suppose. So yeah. more of the same stuff, but I'm hoping to, yeah, just try to do some more, actually go into locations, you know, kind of get outside of the studio as well, because I think that's quite fun and kind of puts me out of my comfort zone too. You know, you kind of get pretty comfortable with what you're doing, but then to actually go out on site, be in person with these people, you know, having, trying to actually have experiences is pretty, it's very different. So, and you're a bit more challenging. So I think that would be something I'd really love to hopefully bring to the listener in the near future.
Well, long may it continue. It's a fabulous show and I find it very eye-opening. And as you say, sometimes, whether you expect it or not, it can be quite emotional when you're hearing people's first-hand accounts on what they're doing. So for anybody who's unaware or doesn't know how to find you, where can they track you down, Dylan, find your show and follow you online, sir?
Anywhere where you are listening to this podcast, you'll be able to find Paranormal Thoughts. And for whatever reason, you can't, just go into Google or whatever browser, type in Paranormal Thoughts podcast, and you'll find us there. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well, so you can connect over there. If you want to reach out, you can send me a message on either one of those platforms or shoot me an email at paranormalthoughtspodcast@gmail.com. And I look forward to hearing from you and your strange stories that you might not feel you can talk about, or maybe you do. Maybe, you know, it might be your party trick, being like, you won't believe what I saw. You know, that's your thing. You know, everyone's different with how open they are these topics, but I think that's unique. You know, that's being human, isn't it? Everyone is very different with how comfortable they are with this phenomena, but it doesn't mean it's any more true or not. Yeah, just thank you so much, Paul. Like, you have a fabulous show as well. I really enjoy hearing your discussions on The Weird and Wonderful as well. So it's all a credit to what you're doing as well. I know a lot of work goes into producing these kinds of shows, and, you know, it's not the easiest kind of podcast either to talk. You know, it's a pretty weird niche. You know, we're not talking about sports or films often, you know what I mean? So yeah, we kind of segregate ourselves, but there's obviously people who are also just as interested in this stuff. So all credit to you too for what you're doing. I think it's important work, and it's, you know, I think it's great just opening up the perspectives of like-minded people.
Mm, absolutely. And to be fair, it's one of those conversations we've had today where I've looked at the clock and thought, my goodness, where's 2 hours gone? So
I know.
Thank 100%. You very much. Thank you very much for your time, your conversation. You continue doing the great work you're doing, and hopefully we will speak again in the future. Take care and have a lovely Christmas.
Thank you so much, Paul.